Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on freedom of speech when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think is wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, our public institutions, and our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they're teaching these ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national consciousness. Now, you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments in the Mosaic Law. Our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. Now, there's at least one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits for their observance. You know, every law has a penalty, and we don't have to know what the penalty to the law is to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the law of God, the common law, natural law, karma, or something else, it's automatic and it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org or call us direct, 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? All right, we've been talking about this thing of freedom of speech. Last time we took a look at the freedom to remain silent. One of the things that I noticed that is very pervasive among those advocates of free speech, when you get right down to where we're talking about freedom of speech, and you ask them, well, what do you think about evolution? Oh, that should be banned. Well, what do you think about abortion? Oh, that should be banned. What do you think about public school? They should be banned. You know, when we're talking about those things that we disagree with, well, we think they should be banned. You know, you ask one side or the other. They believe that the other side should be banned. They should have laws passed against evolution. That was a famous case, just came down a few years back up in Pennsylvania. There's a school district up there, and a lot of the people in the school district wanted to put creation and creationism, and put the Bible and the creation story back into the public schools as the basis of scientific thought. And then on the other side were the evolutionists, and they want evolution to be taught in the public schools, and they don't want the Bible in there, and they don't want special creation taught in the public schools. And they had this big brouhaha going on, and pretty soon it went into federal court, and the federal judge ruled against the school board and said, no, evolution's going to prevail. And so the religious people, they just get up in arms, you know, and they say, well, there's just no free speech. Oh, hell, there's all kinds of free speech out there. Now, listen, if we could ban evolution, should we do that? Think about that pragmatically for a minute. Because if we could ban evolution, if we had that power, well, then we would have to admit then that there is a power that can silence, don't we? Now, if you and I could silence evolution, then we would have to concede that there is a power out there great enough to silence that group of people. Hasn't it occurred to us then, if that power existed, that somebody else might take that power and use it against us and silence us? Hey, that power of silence over there ought to scare the hell out of all of us. I'm not in favor of silencing evolution or a woman's right to choose. I'm not in favor of silencing those political people that I disagree with, you know, like communists and so on. I'm not in favor of silencing sodomites. I'm not in favor of sodomy, and I tell people pretty plainly, I think that that's a pretty poor plan. Let me tell you why. And that's because I think free speech has more to offer than silence. I don't think free speech has to do with silencing my opponents. That's why I mentioned this to you. I said, now listen, Larry Beecraft, in his treatise on destroyed arguments, broached two subjects in there that I disagree with him on. But he had 26 subjects in there, and I agree with 24. I disagree with two. Would I then say, we need to silence Beecraft? He disagreed with me. Why would we want to silence the man? Has it ever occurred to us that maybe he's right and maybe I'm wrong? You know, have you ever been wrong in life? Was there ever a time when you made a mistake? And then later on you found out, hey, wait a minute, that wasn't right. Well, now, if you had the power to execute somebody because he was wrong, I mean, after all, if we got the power to silence, why did we have the power to kill? And if there's somebody out there that I disagree with, then I ought to kill him, shouldn't I? Let's get rid of that scum. Well, now, if we had that power and we actually used it and we killed this guy, and then later on found out, oh, my God, he was right and I was wrong. I killed the wrong guy. Well, then what that means is that we should have killed you. I mean, if execution were the remedy for the people we disagree with, this is what we're objecting to with the Taliban, isn't it? Isn't that what we're disagreeing with the extremists out here? They want to silence women. They don't want women to go to school. They don't want women to speak. They don't want free speech for females. Why not? Well, the reason is because their philosophy is so bankrupt that they don't want it exposed. They want to maintain the status quo. Evolution, in my view, and I think I've demonstrated it conclusively over the years, is the most bankrupt, ignorant, stupid, out of touch with reality and science philosophy that God has ever allowed an ignorant mankind to embrace. And yet God is not prohibiting people from practicing, believing in, and espousing evolutionary philosophy. Is he? Hell, it's everywhere. I was watching nature last night. 350 million years ago. Well, okay. I can only think of one other philosophy more ignorant than evolution, and that's religion. If you've got a champion that can outdo religion and evolution, let me know, would you? Let me consider it. I like to, once in a while, delve into the realm of insanity so that we can just kind of roll around in it and wallow in it for a while, and then I can get up and look at it and say, oh, my God. School curriculum is a very important topic to a lot of people, and they get real excited about school curriculum. I'm not complaining about the Ludi school over here. Their curriculum over here, I think, sucks. I don't think I'd send my dog over there to go to public school. I don't think they could teach him how to do it on a paper. But, hey, listen, most of the people here in our local area believe in public school, as evidenced by the fact that most of the people here, you know, 99% of the people here, I'd say well over 90, and I'm going to say 99%. I don't know of any parochial schools here in Ozark County. None. I don't think there are any, unless you counted mine, and this one isn't four children. So the only other alternative that people have in Ozark County is homeschool. And if you take a look at the number of homeschoolers there are in Ozark County, I think you could count them on one hand. Everybody else goes to public school. Now, most of those people complain about the curriculum in public school. They're just up in arms. They hate the evolution. They hate the free choice of right to life, or no, it's not right to life, it's freedom to choose, you know, the abortion issue. They don't like it. They don't like sex education taught in school. And I'm sitting here saying, what the hell's the pitch? Why don't you jerk your kid out of public school? Why don't you shut up? Shut up. And jerk your kid out of public school and educate him at home, teach him what you want him to learn. If you don't like what's being taught in your public school, why don't you take your kid out of public school and teach your kid what you want your kid to learn? You don't like sex education in public school? Terrific. Why don't you educate your child? Why don't you educate your child to sex? Huh? My dad educated me. I educated my children. Well, I don't know. I'm just asking you, because I don't have a problem with evolution. I'm not trying to shut the evolutionists up. It's very easy to take evolutionary philosophy. Let's just take an example here just for funsies, and then I'll show you what I mean. Remember, once in a while, I bring up the sun is shrinking. Remember, listen to this. This is evolution at its best. I mean, these people are so far out of touch with reality. I can counter these kinds of arguments with one hand tied behind my back. Kent Hovind says he can do it with both hands tied behind his back. The whole evolutionary philosophy taken as a whole is stupid. S-T-U-P-I-D. Stupid. All right, now you're an evolutionist, right? Now listen to this. Listen to your own stupidity. Let me expose you for what you are. That's what free speech is all about. Hell, I don't want to shut you up. I want you to come out and open your mouth so I can expose you for the jerk that you are, for the ignoramus that you are. I can do that all day long and have fun doing it. Hell, the last thing in the world I want to do is shut you up. Same thing's true with religion. I'm not here trying to stamp out Catholicism for crying out loud. Why do we want to waste our time doing something like that? And so the Catholics and the Protestants, you know, they're at each other's throats and they've been fighting for centuries and killing each other. Look at North Ireland. Those people up there blowing each other up, killing each other over religion. Held both of them together, couldn't find their hind ends at high noon with both hands in a roadmap. Both of them together, Protestants and Catholics alike. Why? Their philosophies are bankrupt. Why do you have to silence some guy that is that ignorant? Why do we have to silence ignorance? It's ignorance that runs around under the guise of hate crime legislation. You know, if you Jews out there, if you have a real honest-to-God case concerning the Holocaust, why do you care about historical revisionists? Why don't you just expose the historical revisionists for the nitwits that they are? Why don't you just bring out the facts, the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence, and prove your case, and expose those screwballs for the screwballs that they are? Keeping in mind now, if you are temporarily in the majority and have the power to silence your critics, bear in mind that when they become the majority, they will have the power to silence you. You know, any government's big enough to give you everything you want is big enough to take everything you've got. So I'd like to leave the evolutionists and the Jews and the Catholics and the Protestants and the Muslims alone. Let them come out and speak. The reason that religious people want to silence evolution is because they're so damn ignorant themselves, they themselves can't counter evolution. That's what their problem is. When you can't answer, when you don't have any intelligent response, then your natural response is, oh, I got to shut him up. Well, wait a minute. Has it ever occurred to you that maybe he's right? If you can't shut him up, has it occurred to you that you're wrong? I was wrong once. I got to looking it over, and I said, oh, my God, this isn't right. And so when I found out that I was wrong, I said, well, since I'm wrong, then the other guy over here, he was correct. Why not go over and say, Bob, you were right. Boy, I'm really glad that we had this debate, this discussion. I'm really tickled to death. I was laboring under this misapprehension. I actually thought that ABC was true, and thanks to you, Bob, you have now enlightened me, and now I can see how wrong I was. But now look at how right I am, because now you have educated me and showed me where I was wrong. See how simple that is? What the hell is wrong with being wrong? It happens to the best of us. And so by silencing those who are correct, all we do is promote ignorance. By silencing people who differ or disagree with us, we're just promoting our own stupidity. Hell, the other guy might have a good point there. So when a communist comes in and says, well, let me explain to you communism, I like to listen politely. Well, okay. And then when he gets through, I say, can you tell me where this has ever worked before? Oh, God, it worked in Russia. It worked in China. Oh, and how's their standard of living today? Well, it's rising and getting higher and higher all the time. That's wonderful. Has anybody else got a higher standard of living than they have in China? Well, yeah, they do in France, for instance. Well, they do it in France. You know, if you take a look around, you know, if communism was such a good program over here and produced all this wealth and prosperity, hell, the whole world ought to be filthy rich. Everybody in the world's practicing communism. Hell, you people are all sending your children to public school. And that's the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. And then you're sitting here bitching about evolution, for crying out loud. You're practicing communists, bitching about evolution. Has it ever occurred to you that maybe evolution's your problem? I was watching New Orleans, you know, and there was a lady down there being interviewed, and she was asked this question. Well, now that New Orleans has been destroyed, what are you people going to do with Mardi Gras down here? And she says, there will be Mardi Gras. We will not give up Mardi Gras. We'll work hard to produce Mardi Gras. And I'm sitting there saying, has it ever occurred to any of you people down in New Orleans that Mardi Gras was the cause of your flood to start with? Has it ever occurred to you that maybe God had enough of your Mardi Gras and your pagan philosophies and practices and your filth and perversion and said, I think I'm going to tune you up? Now listen, when this God gets up and after it now over here, have you ever thought about Noah's flood? I mean, he didn't do that to New Orleans, but has it ever occurred to you that he's done it in the past and he might do it again in the future? I just throw it out for your consideration. You know, you got Sodom and Gomorrah and Noah's flood. Not that it's happened yet, but he says it's going to happen. This God, you know, tells you that he's going to go ballistic on you here one of these days, or go worse, maybe he's going to go postal on you. All right, so when we take a look at school curriculum, public school debate, politics, gold and silver versus paper money, let's take a look at gold and silver versus paper money. Back in 1787, I guess it was, our founding fathers established a convention. It's called the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia. And so they're sitting there talking about this Constitution, and they debated, and they went back and forth, and then they came up with an idea, and they said, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Now, most of you people are opposed to gold and silver coin, and I don't deny that. Ron Paul, that kook in the Congress of the United States, is in favor of it. He's one of the few guys that are walking around on the streets. There's a guy named Edwin Vieira. He walks around on the streets. There's a guy named Larry Beecraft. He walks around on the, walks around out on the streets advocating, if you can believe this, advocating that we return to gold and silver coin, which is what our Constitution mandates in Article 1, Section 10. And so Larry Beecraft, who is an advocate of hard money, and George Gordon, who is a believer and a disciple of hard money, I listened to Edwin Vieira and I listened to Larry Beecraft and I said, God, those two guys really make a lot of sense. Well, to me they do. I mean, to most of you people out there, they're a couple of radical kooks, but to me they made a lot of sense. And I'll tell you why I thought they made sense. I looked at the United States and our history from 1787 to 1933. And I said, my God, there is no parallel to the political, economic, and military power amassed by one civilization, one city, state, nation, or empire in the history of the world in such a short period of time as the United States of America. And if you think there is one, name it. Name it. From 1787 to 1933, we're talking about 146 years, about 150 years. In 150 years, these 13 backward colonies, I mean, these people, you know, in the colonies of the United States, numbered about 3 million people, maybe 4, and these colonies are backward. They're not advanced first world industrial or economic powers like Spain, France, and England, or even Russia for that matter. They're just a bunch of colonists on the frontier with blunderbuss guns and optimism for the future. They fight a revolution and they get their freedom and they create a constitution. And in their constitution, they put in a clause for gold and silver coin. And then from 1787 to 1933, they practice hard money, gold and silver. Albeit they had a lot of paper money in there also, but they had hard money. And you look at 150 years of their experience, they become the world now. They replaced Britain as the world's prominent or preeminent military power. And remember, even as recently as 1933, the sun never set on the British Empire. And yet the United States of America in 1930 had more military power. In fact, in World War I, without the military power of the United States, England and France combined could not have defeated Germany, period. And the Germans could defeat the English, they could defeat the French, and they could defeat the Russians. In fact, they could defeat the three of them simultaneously. And they did it twice. The Germans didn't do it once, they did it twice. And the only thing that saved the British, the French, and the Russians were the Americans, or the British, the French, and the English, was the Americans, and we did it for them twice. And that came about in 150 years. The French, the British, and the Russians, they could not develop the military power that we developed in the United States in 150 years. Economics. Hey, kids, by 1930, the United States of America was the world's number one economic power. Did it in 150 years. Boys and girls, the United States of America by 1930 was the world's number one political power. All right, now, by 1950, I'll give you a little illustration as to how powerful we were. There are 15 leading economic indicators of industrial production in the world. 15. Steel production is one. Aircraft production, aluminum production, coal production, so on. In 1950, the United States was number one, was the number one producer of steel, aluminum, automobiles, airplanes, coal. In all 15, not 1, 2, 9, or 11, but all 15 of the economic indicators, the United States was number one in every single one. Today, as I speak, the United States is no longer number one in any of the 15. We are not the world's number one auto producer. We're not the world's number one steel producer. We're not the world's number one coal producer. Now, something pretty dramatic has occurred between 1950 and 2009, wouldn't you say? Something. So, when we take a look at America and the principles that we used in this country to promote, to create this kind of political, economic, and military machine, it was hard money that did it. Hard money, gold and silver. And yet, do you hear anybody in Washington talking about hard money today? Not a one. Why, they stamp out, they do not allow any discussion whatsoever concerning gold and silver coin. The bankers, the politicians, the big business CEOs, the AIGs, the JP Morgans, not a word about gold and silver coin. Well, you can hear about trillions of dollars worth of phony paper money. You can hear about stocks and the plunge protection team and all the rest. And hey, listen, I'm all in favor of free speech. And then listen, the people of America, you have a right to listen to free speech. I've always pointed out to my students, hey, listen, I'm not here as your conscience. I'm not here to tell you who to listen to or what you should believe. That's what freedom is all about. You have to have that choice. And a lot of times I listen to people and I say, oh my God, that guy's making the wrong choice. He's listening to the wrong people. It's going to come back and bite him in the butt. But I stifle myself. I shut my mouth. The other day, a guy came to me and he said, "Hey, listen." He had a little job to do, and he went out and he did it. And when he got through with the job, it turned out bad. He didn't like the way the job turned out. And he complained to my wife. He said, "Well, I listened to the paid professionals. I listened to the experts over here." And she pointed out, "Well, the experts that you listened to, were they selling you their product?" And he said, "Yeah." Then she said, "Well, doesn't it occur to you that the guy that's selling you the product is going to tell you something different than somebody else over here who isn't selling you the product?" All right, so free speech is where everybody gets to put his input into it, and you get to decide who you want to believe. And sometimes you'll pick the wrong guy. I mean, my wife, all she is just a girl. Why would a man listen to my wife? Why would some man out here listen to just a woman? What in the hell could a woman know? Well, has it ever occurred to you that maybe women aren't as dumb as you give them credit for? I'm just throwing that out for your consideration. It is true that they're physically weaker than most men, but has it ever occurred to you that maybe women are smarter than men? I mean, that's a wild new concept, isn't it? A woman that's smarter than a man. Can you see why over in Muslim countries, the men over there have to throttle those women back, keep them out of school? They're so damn ignorant over there to start with that the last thing in the world they want to do is to be shown up by a woman. That's why they have to throttle those women down and deny them free speech. See, my wife is pretty smart, and I give her credit for that, and I leave her alone. One day, I'll tell you a little story here. One day, I was out on the road teaching, and my wife, my second wife here, Jackie, was one of the students in class. And I noticed her because when she opened her mouth, she would ask a question, and the question made sense. See? And so other students, when they open their mouth, there's a lot of frivolity, stupidity. Sometimes the ignorance comes out and it manifests itself. And this is why God in Proverbs said, even a fool, when he holds his peace, is counted as wise. You know, a fool is known by multitude of words. And so when you open your mouth, oftentimes what comes out is gibberish. And then the rest of us are sitting around saying, "What the hell is that guy talking about?" That's what I hear when I listen to religious guys. "What in the hell is that guy talking about?" That's what I hear when I hear some evolution guy come along. "Hey, what's that guy talking about? Where's his names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence?" Moral to the story over here is we have to silence people because we're afraid that they're smarter than we are, that they're more knowledgeable than we are. We don't want to admit that now, do we? Oh, heaven forbid that we want to admit that our wives are smarter than we are, or that they might know something, or that their brains function and they say, "Wait a minute, let's think this through before we do that." So I noticed that. Anyway, I hired her. I said, "Hey, woman," she actually came to me and she said, "Hey, do you have any salesmen?" And I said, "Yeah, I got one." And she said, "Well, would you like to have two?" And I said, "I'd like to have 20. And she said, "Well, what are you paying?" And I said, "Well, what are you producing?" I mean, I don't mind paying, you know, if there's a production out there. Guy called me the other day from a radio station. He said, "Hey, pay me." I said to the wife, I said, how many customers did we get from the radio station?" She said, "None." I said, "We got a radio station out here that produces no customers. How much do we want to spend on a radio station for advertising that doesn't produce any customers, boys and girls? Can you figure that out? That's higher mathematics." And my wife came up with the answer all by herself. Didn't even take her shoes off. She said, "I don't want to spend another dime on that radio station because they produce no customers." And I said, ah, that's very wise of you, woman. Now the guy at the radio station is probably sitting down there with chagrin saying, "Oh my God, if he doesn't send me the money, why, how am I going to stay in business?" Well, I'm sorry to report to you, son, that you're going to have to get some other advertiser because if you can't sell the advertiser's goods, of what value is the radio station? I mean, come on, we're just talking about business, just talking about free speech here. I just got to tell you that your station doesn't do anything for me. I wouldn't tell you that you should close your radio station now. But the people that are listening to your music, listening to your commentary, listening to your radio station don't produce customers for my product. They might produce customers for some other guy's product, but they're not producing mine. All right, so that's what free speech is all about. It also goes into freedom of choice. Hey, do I have a right to choose? So I hired my wife. I chose a woman. Oh, my God. I introduced her to the office staff, all male, of course, and they hated her. Coming right out of the chute, they hated her. I couldn't figure out why. Well, it made itself evident right away. She was outselling the other salesman by at least 3-1, not 2-1, not 50%, at least 3-1 within the first 30 days. And she never got a single lead out of the school or off the radio program. She had all cold call leads. Who's the better salesman, Charlie or Jackie? Man, hell, you don't have to be real smart to figure that out. And you know what they all wanted to do? They wanted to fire her. They wanted to shut her up. They wanted to cut her territory down. They wanted to do everything they could to put her out of business. And I said, why? What do we want to do that for? She's the biggest asset that we have at Barristers Inn. And I was outvoted by at least 10 to 1. They said, get rid of her. Hell, that sounds like Moses. Let's stone him to death. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact discs. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, that doesn't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing and recommending are necessarily going to reciprocate and endorse and recommend us. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about freedom of speech. Freedom of speech also includes freedom to remain silent. We talked about that last time, but it also embodies our freedoms of choice. Freedom of choice is really what we're all after. And oftentimes when I see somebody making the wrong choice, I shut up. I shut up because everybody has a right to make a mistake. I don't think I ought to interfere with your right to make a mistake, to make an error. If somebody asks me, I'll tell them. The guy asked me the other day, he said, why didn't you tell me? I said, because you didn't ask. It's just that simple. I didn't tell you because you didn't ask. Now, there's a lot of things that I believe, a lot of things that I think, a lot of things that I want to express, and I'm not going down to cookies or down to the bistro, you know, and standing up on my soapbox and saying, gather around, boys and girls, hear ye, let me tell you what I know. You know, if you don't ask, I'm not going to tell you. I have my opinions and beliefs just like you and everybody else, and I like to express them from time to time, and I get letters in here from time to time, and they say, you know, you're the dumbest screwball I have ever heard in my life. And you know, Charlie, I think that you should have the right to express your views. So I oftentimes write emails back and say, listen, not only do you have a right to disagree with me, I commend you for doing that. Let me encourage you to do what I've done. Why don't you go out and get an internet website? Why don't you go out and buy radio time and put your views out there for everybody to consider? I don't know of anybody that's ever done that, but that's what I did. Say, when I didn't like what I heard, I said, I'm going to go out there and counter that. So when I hear evolution, I say, well, good. That evolution guy, he should have his right to his beliefs and his practices. And he should be able to espouse those. And if he wants to espouse those views in the public school, let him have at it. So I took my children out of the public school, educated them at home, because I said to myself, I don't believe in that evolution crap, and I'm not going to subject my children to it. And I didn't. Then, after I had educated my children to creation, then I said to myself, my children need to know how to counter evolutionary philosophy. I mean, after all, that's what's out there in the real world. So I sent my children to the public school so that they could learn the other side of the argument. Then, after they learned evolution, they said, Dad, this creation-evolution thing doesn't mesh. And I said, that's right, it doesn't. One of them is wrong. And I said, furthermore, it could be that both of them are wrong. And there could be a third, fourth, or fifth answer to the riddle. But now, let's take a look at evolution and let's see what's wrong with it. Now let's think about this, boys and girls, because this is what I did with my children. I said, now let's understand what's wrong with evolution. And then if it's wrong, then let's reject it. Now, then let's take a look at what's wrong with the creation model. Let's take a look at, and then let's compare them and let's see which one holds out the most truth, which one makes the most sense, which one is the most logical. All right, let's try it. Listen to this. The sun is shrinking. Boys and girls, did you know that the sun was shrinking? All right, now, as of my own knowledge, I don't know that. I have never measured the sun. I have never gotten any grants from government to fund me to buy telescopes or to give me time on the Mount Palomar telescope so that I could study the sun for 100 years and determine whether or not it's shrinking. So, as a jurist, I look at it and say, well, somebody says it's shrinking. Let's listen to their story. Let's listen to their argument. Let's not shut them up. Let's let them make their case. Maybe it's true. I don't know. So if you're like I am, I don't know any more about the sun shrinking than you do. But they say the sun is shrinking. That was a Newswire report, which was made March 23, 1980, and appeared in USA Today. And it made this surprising statement. It said, quote, the sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by about 0.1% per century. Pause right here for editorial comment. That's their case, not mine. I'm not arguing with them. I don't know if it's 0.1% per century or 0.2% per century or 0.5% per century. I don't have a clue. This isn't my argument. This is the evolution argument. This is what they're telling me. All right, so let's listen to their case. Remember, that's what free speech is all about. Scientists have been watching for over 100 years, and the evidence is conclusive. Again, you may sit there and say, I don't believe the evidence is conclusive. What in the hell do you know about the evidence? I haven't got a clue. I don't know if the evidence is conclusive or partial. Until I read the article, I didn't even know the sun was shrinking. When I went to school, they told me the sun isn't shrinking. There's some kind of special force up there, and it's not burning up. It's not contracting. I couldn't understand it at the time, because when I struck a match, it would be consumed. There'd be a stick left over there, you know, a charred ember. But I noticed that it changed its form, didn't weigh as much. Some energy had been dissipated. I could watch that. And they told me, well, that doesn't happen with the sun. Now I'm reading this newspaper account over here, and they say, my God, the sun is shrinking. Wow, I don't know. What the hell do I know? Will Rogers summed it up. He said, all I know is what I read in the papers, and so here we are reading the papers. And they say it's conclusive. They said, every hour the sun is shrinking about 5 feet. Again, that's that guy's opinion. That's that guy's case. That's that guy's freedom of speech. I don't know if the sun is shrinking by 5 feet an hour or 10 feet an hour or 2 feet an hour. I haven't got a clue. It's his case. He's making it. He's telling me. This is his freedom of speech. He says, hey, the sun, it's shrinking by 5 feet. I looked in the Bible, and God never said how fast the sun was burning up. Maybe he doesn't know. And if he does, he ain't telling. Now, boys and girls, if you've read the Bible and if you think that you know how fast the sun is shrinking and you got it straight from the Pope or from Jesus or somebody, send me a letter. Let me know. I don't know. I saw two places in the Bible where God said the world was round, the earth was round. And then I listened to the Pope, and he said, no, it's flat. And then years later, they actually got out there and started taking some measurements and found out it was round. And so I said, well, I guess God knew more than the Pope. And that was my conclusion. All right, so every hour, the sun is shrinking by about 5 feet. Now, if the sun is shrinking 0.1% per century, then that totals 1% per millennium. Well, I got my Sharp EL1197G3 Texas Instrument calculator out, and I checked them out, and that's about right. That's correct. Now, if the sun existed only 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present diameter. So I didn't know how big the sun was. How big? What's the diameter of the sun? Come on, boys and girls, do you know? So I went to the encyclopedia and looked it up. It's about 750,000 miles. Or as they say down here in the Ozarks, that's a fur piece. 750,000 miles in diameter. That's not how far it is around the outside of it. That's how far it is from one side of it straight through the middle to the other side diameter. 750,000 miles through the middle of the orange. Wow, that's a big ball up there, all right. And then, now, do I know that it's 750,000 miles in diameter? Hell no, that's their case they're making. I looked it up in the encyclopedia. I looked in the Bible. God never did tell me how big it was. He didn't say it was 37 spans and 2 cubits. He never said. Maybe he doesn't know how big it is. But just because God hasn't told me what the diameter of the sun is doesn't tell me that he doesn't know. I guess he figured that I could figure that out with my Sharp EL1197G, but I got news for him. I couldn't. Doesn't have enough spaces out there. And I've tested that. The numbers are getting so damn big now from the government. I can't even count to a trillion when I take my shoes off, for crying out loud. And my Sharp doesn't help me either. It gets out there and goes into E tilt. It just goes tilt when I try to put a trillion into it. So he goes on. He says here, now, if it existed only 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present diameter. And 20 million years ago, the surface of the sun would be touching the earth. And as far as researchers can tell, this rate of shrinkage has been constant since the origin of the sun. Now, do you remember this guy, Charles Lyell? Remember, he's one of the pillars of modern geology. Well, here's what they do. These famous evolutionists, they say, well, what's going on right now is what's always been going on. So if you see the Grand Canyon being excavated at the rate of 1 inch per century, and that's what they've calculated and reported to me, 1 inch per century, and then they say, well, now we go up here to the rim, that's a mile up there, and that's how fast that this canyon has been eroding. That's their story. The story that I got out of Genesis 6, 7, and 8 tells me something else, but that's their story. So, you know, free speech requires them to make their case. Or as they used to say, give them enough rope and they'll hang himself. And this last statement down here, which says, 20 million years ago, the surface of the sun would be touching the earth. Now, remember, these guys are always talking about billions and billions of years ago. Not millions now with an M, but billions with a B. All right. Now, I went to the encyclopedia again because I didn't know how far it was from here to the sun. It goes to show you how dumb I am. And they told me it's about 93 million miles. And again, as they say down here in the Ozark, that's a fur piece. So the sun is 750,000 miles in diameter, and it's 93 million miles to the sun. This is what science tells us. This is what Darwin tells us. This is what evolution tells us. This is science now. My God, fall on your face and worship. Science says. Okay. Now, if we do a little bit of arithmetic here, 20 million years ago, that's a long time now, 20 million. But compared to billions, it's just, you know, just the other night, a couple nights back. And 20 million years ago is about one-third the time that I learned when I went to school the dinosaurs died out. Remember, they died out 65 million years ago. All right, now, have you got all these parameters into your computer here? Got your brain scrambling around here? All right. Science now, taking your tax dollars. Here's your tax dollars at work. And you're sending your money faithfully to Washington, and the politicians are faithfully giving that money to researchers who are working at the California Institute of Technology and NASA, you know, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration and MIT and Yale and Harvard, and all these colleges collecting all this government largesse. And then they pay all these people that have PhDs to go out and study things, you know, like, well, how fast is the sun shrinking? And so they come back and tell us, hey, it's 5 feet an hour. Well, okay, hell, even those truck drivers and longshoremen now can grasp that. Well, if it's burning up at 5 feet an hour, that would equal X amount of feet per century. That's how many feet per, you know, how many miles, you know, per millennium. And when we do the arithmetic, and hell, you can do this arithmetic yourself. 20 million years ago, at the rate that the sun is being burned up now, and Charles Lyell says uniformitarianism is the rule that we follow, then the size of the sun would be 93 million miles in diameter, which just happens to be 93 million miles to the sun. Now, let's think for a minute. If the sun and the earth were in such close proximity that the earth was right next to the sun, you know, like about 50 thousandths of an inch away, do you think the sun would be hot enough to burn the earth up? Do you think there would be any dinosaurs out there? Do you think there'd be any oceans left? Because these same evolutionists tell us that the dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago. At the same time, they're telling us that at the rate the sun is burning up right now, 5 feet an hour, 20 million years ago, the sun was 93 million miles in diameter. That's why I said at the beginning of this program, I said, if you can come up with a philosophy that is any more bankrupt, any dumber, any more stupid than evolution, other than maybe religion, would you please send me a letter and let me know what it is? I'm not here telling you that we need to shut the evolutionists up. Let the fools speak. A fool is known by multitude of words. And so when the guy speaks, I say, well, okay, let me get my pencil out here and write this down. You said, what? You say the sun's burning up at 5 feet an hour? Okay. How big is the sun? 750,000 miles in diameter. Okay. See, I don't have to sit here and argue with you and say, oh, no, the sun isn't 750,000 miles in diameter. What the hell do I know? Let the guy make his argument. If his argument is true, then the numbers will work out. And then we can sit down and shut up. The guy's right. But if his numbers aren't correct, then they're not going to come out. And when they don't come out, all we have to ask is the closing question. Could you explain that to us, Professor? How can you have dinosaurs dying 65 million years ago when the sun and the earth were kissing cousins 20 million years ago? So if we went back 40 million years, where would the sun be? Well, it would be out, you know, maybe where Mars is, or maybe bigger. I don't know how big it would be. But in the final analysis, the numbers don't check out. That's what freedom of speech is all about. I don't want to shut the guy up. I want him to speak, and then let me speak. That's what fair speech is all about. That's the other half of the equation, the free speech, fair speech. And this is what we're lacking here is fair speech. You see, the bankers and the government and big business, they can talk about their bailout programs and talk about trillions of dollars, and they can talk about stocks and bonds, but we don't get to talk about hard money, gold and silver coin in Article 1, Section 10, and the success we had from 1787 to 1933. That's off limits. Why, we can't talk about that. And I want to ask, why not? Why not? Has it ever occurred to you that maybe a small minority of people like Larry B. Craft and Edwin Vieira and Ron Paul, maybe they're right? Has it ever occurred to us? Maybe if they're right and Paulson, Bernanke, and Tiny Tim are wrong, that maybe we're following the wrong gurus and maybe it's going to come back and bite us in the butt. Maybe we could save ourselves a lot of time, effort, and energy and a lot of money and a lot of sadness and weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth if we were to listen to somebody else and give them fair speech time and let them exercise their right to free speech. And yes, it's true. They might persuade us that what we're doing is wrong, but then I was wrong once before. Have you ever been wrong? Just once? Just once. No, I'm not in favor of changing the school curriculum. If you don't like the school curriculum, you can correct that. Take your kid out of public school and educate him at home to the curriculum that you want to educate him to. That's what freedom of choice is all about. That's what freedom is all about. What the hell's wrong with that? You don't like evolution? Terrific. Why don't you go out and teach special creation or teach whatever it is that you believe? Exercise your right to free speech. And let's the rest of us exercise that guy's right to fair speech and let's you and I shut up and let him speak. That's a wild new concept. That's why I'm in favor of letting Larry B. Craft say what he wants to say. And so I came back and I said, I think you're wrong, Larry, and here's why. So I exercised my right to free speech. And in fact, I got my right to fair speech because Larry B. Craft didn't try to shut me up. That's what freedom of speech is all about. All right, kids, we're out of time. We're going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour at Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.